Hello and welcome to Politically Enraged, a podcast made for the lefties amongst us. Politically Enraged is a podcast about politics, both British and further afield, and a place to talk about society and how it needs to be improved for everyone. You can find us on Twitter at Political Rages, Instagram at Politically Enraged. You can sponsor the show on Ko-fi, or you can follow my personal socials. I'm Davey Moo, across all social media, and I'm here to talk to real people about real problems and work out how we move forward. Enjoy. Hello and welcome to Politically Enraged, the podcast designed to be the lefties' refuge, and welcome to a very sneezy coffee episode because I am rather unwell. I've just got a cold. It's not a huge deal, but I mean, Therese Coffey's in charge of the NHS. I'm probably going to be dead before tomorrow, so I thought I'd make this podcast episode now. Big apologies for being quiet over the last couple of weeks. I've had a bit of a mad time on, but I'm finally starting to settle down and I'm back into a bit of an easier schedule, so I thought I would record this just to talk about what the fucking hell's going on in the UK. I do have some international listeners, so allow me to explain the status quo. The Queen died. We had 10 days of national mourning, so the government wasn't working. The government snapped into action and immediately decimated the economy. Liz Truss and Kwasi Kwarteng signed off on some long-term agreed things that they were going to do, which was in their book Britannia Unchained, which is the most ironic piece of written literature ever existent. And now, while the UK's economy spirals into the toilet and the British Bank has to actually intervene to make sure that we don't all lose our pensions, the government have gone on holiday again. Technically, they've been in charge for 21 days, but for 10 days of that, they were in mourning, and now they're on holiday again. So, yeah, good times in Britain. When it comes to Elizabeth Truss, she is a woman that can't be trusted and she has absolutely no idea whatsoever what she's doing. It's quite comical to see, and by comical I mean deeply depressing and disturbing, but at the same time, I don't think anyone's shocked. I'm certainly not. When it comes to Kwasi Kwarteng, as I said, he and Truss actually co-authored Britannia Unchained, and it was a suggestion of how they could get Britain to move forward as a country. And apparently that plan is to completely decimate the entire country and turn us into a feudalist state where we're ruled over by small groups of serfs. I'm sure that that's what the government's going to do, devolve themselves and start ruling over us. But looking forward to being a mud-covered peasant carrying around a torch is all I can say. Kwarteng's big idea was that he was going to offer tax cuts as incentives to the richest amongst us, so they would feel confident in investing into the economy because it would mean that they would get bigger bang for their buck on their returns when it comes to having tax rebates and things like that, and just having more of their money in their pockets. But what that actually did was make people realise that these people have gone completely insane and off the reservation. So they're currently trying to shift all of the money that they have into another country where it's actually worth something. And that has a cumulative effect where more and more people are taking their money out of the UK, crashing the pound's value more and more. Whilst it does have some good effects, because a couple of people have explained to me that it's good for export, it's really not good for your common person. People are terrified of what's going to happen to their mortgages. I am certainly terrified about what my landlord's going to do about my rent next year, because it's already looking dire, considering my electricity bills are about to go up because I'm waiting for my electricity provider to write to me and tell me how expensive my bills are going to be. The delights. Additionally, if you want to factor in the cumulative effects of things like Brexit, now just goods are more expensive. It's harder to buy what you need to buy in the shops. It's harder to buy any luxuries. It's harder to buy takeaways. Everything is more expensive. And part of that is that there's more demand post-Brexit, but it's also because everything's more expensive to wholesale and bring into the country. And if you want to make any kind of profit by selling things out of the country, it's also more expensive to send it. Essentially, the government with the moniker responsible with the economy have decided to show us just how irresponsible they are. And a lot of us have been screaming this for a very long time. I remember when the Conservatives took over. Even at my young age then, I think I was 21, 22, I remember saying, these people are not financially responsible. They're going to absolutely decimate the economy. And I remember being told by more than one family member, oh, you don't know nothing. Well,
surprise, motherfucker.
When it comes to everyone's pet obsession, Brexit, that's not going particularly well either for a multitude of reasons, not the least because the people in charge have the fiscal expertise of a piece of chewing gum on the bottom of your shoe. Brexit was always designed to fail, but one of my favourite things that's happened is Crispin O'Day, who first of all made a fortune the day after Brexit because he purposely shorted the pound, knowing that the markets were going to collapse because of the lack of confidence in the UK's economy to recover after such a stupid move. Made a fortune, and he's just repeated the same process because he was probably one of the people that was in the meeting with Kwarteng and Truss because he's an ardent supporter of anyone that's right-wing because he's an absolute freakazoid. And he was complaining today that the reason that he decided to bet against the pound was because of Remainers. You know, those people who didn't want any of the bad stuff to happen, didn't want anything to change, were absolutely fine with the status quo. It's our fault that people voted out and all of these repercussions have happened. Of course. Make it make sense, hun. But it's not just him. A lot of people are blaming Remainers for all of the economic disasters of the last few months. Apparently our lack of confidence and belief in the UK means that the UK is failing. And all I can say is, if the lack of belief of 48% of people wasn't enough, maybe that's why we shouldn't have gone with it as a binding fucking idea, considering it was supposed to be an indicative referendum. I often see people call Brexit the most egregious act of self-harm a country could commit, and I'm starting to agree. The thing is, we have this really weird sort of dilemma in the UK, because we have had 756,000 crises and, you know, 86 different unprecedented times to live through since Brexit. So I understand why there's a lot of people out there that think that it's still a defensible idea that maybe Brexit could have worked just if COVID hadn't happened and just if the war in Ukraine hadn't happened and just if the fucking sky hadn't fallen down. But unfortunately, that doesn't hold weight for me because I remember 2016 when the referendum was coming up and I used to go out for meals with my friends who were like bankers and economists and things like that. Not the super rich kind, obviously, because who? But people that knew about economics and finances, and they predicted all of the shit that's happened well in advance. And genuinely, I wrote this on my blog today. It was like sitting with Cassandra. I remember some of the conversations I had about just how bad things were going to get. And at the time, I thought they were catastrophizing, but it turns out that they were actually pretty much on the ball. And this is the funniest thing about a project like Brexit, is it literally could not have gone much worse than it has. But people were so determined to try and believe in the best of it that they were ignoring the warning signs that it was going to be terrible. And I think this is indicative of the whole problem that the UK suffers at large with the different factions. On one side, you've got a bunch of people who think that it's patriotic to believe the best in Britain. No, we're an industrious nation of people that can make things work. And whilst I don't disagree with that sentiment to some extent, because there are a lot of people that will work hard in Britain, the big problem isn't your average common working person that you see on the street every day. It's who's in charge. And if you put a bunch of lazy, rich, self-entitled pricks in power who do nothing but play nepotism and fuck the cocaine all day, then you're probably not going to end up with a fantastic result, are you? So here's the thing. Maybe Brexit was a matter of semantics, and maybe if we'd have had someone who didn't just have this weird charisma that Boris Johnson seems to have that makes people love him, and we actually had someone that was smart in power, perhaps he could have made a deal that would have made Brexit work. I still don't think that's the case. I think that Brexit was always designed to fail. This is another thing. People always say, well, the EU was so mean to us. And I'm like, yep, that was another one of the reasons that I voted against Brexit in the first place. Because if you think that the EU was going to turn around and let a member state leave, including with all of the stuff that we did, like pay tons of money into the EU, you're an idiot. Of course they weren't going to make it easy for us. They were always going to make us struggle to try and disincentivize other member states from doing the same fucking thing, you idiots, which was why you shouldn't have voted for us to do it. I mean, even the arguments to Brexit make me laugh anyway. When you talk to people and they're like, oh, the EU was anti-democratic. You do know they're still our closest neighbours, right? And we still have to deal with them for trade. Like, we can't just ice them out forever because we get things from them and we send things there to sell. There's 27 countries that you want to cut your nose off to spite your face with. When it comes to working with the EU, it would have been the stupidest thing possible for us to just completely cut them out. So when it comes to it, what we did was go from working in conjunction with them and have a huge amount of sway, which the UK arguably did in the EU. We had a big amount of sway and we took that away. And now we're just on the outside screaming to be let back in so that we can trade. I know that there's no real apt metaphors for it, but I see it as like standing outside of a club screaming through the wall to get the DJ to try and change the music instead of being inside and holding up your fucking iPhone with please can you play this song written on it. But the overall most frustrating thing about Brexit, the most annoying part of it all, the thing that really pisses me off is that every fucking week I have to, like, I check the news every single day, obviously, to see what's going on with politics because I like to commentate on it. And every single day there will be some fuckwit right-winger who's talking about how everything bad because of Brexit is because of Remainers' fault. It's like I was saying earlier, there's two factions in the UK. There's one side who wants to believe all the positives. Oh, we'll leave the EU and everyone will be really nice to us and they'll do really good trade deals with us because they really want to work with us because they think that we're great and we are great. And then on the other side, there's these people that were cast as doom mongers and stupid and like didn't believe hard enough in how the country was going to go because we're so industrious and great. And those people were realists. The other people were just hopelessly naive. And some of those people were very well-respected economists, but those people were also desperately biased in terms of thinking that the UK was going to survive and thrive after cutting out 27 partners to trade with. When it comes to the long-term economic damage of Brexit, I don't even want to think about how bad it's going to be long-term. The main thing that bugs me about it is not what's going to happen to me, because I'm sure I'll make do one way or another. It's the fact that I have two nieces and a nephew who are really going to struggle because their choices that I had and that my sisters had and that my parents had are limited now. They don't have the same choices as me, and I think that's bullshit. In a world that should be progressing further and further forwards, they have less options than I did, and I think that's absolutely shit. Of course, people will say things like, oh, well, they'll have more job opportunities because no more people from the EU come in. That is really not how it works, especially with the education system in the UK. This is one of the biggest problems. We have so many problems that in tandem intersect into each other. We have a government who has underfunded public education for such a long time, made university too expensive, made the repayments for university too expensive. And because of those things, people can't have the same access that I did and that other people in my family did. And we just keep making it worse. But education in general is reaching appalling terms in the UK. My nephew is really, really smart, and I'm very, very lucky to be related to a kid that's as intelligent as he is. When it comes to other kids that I've met that I talk to that are, you know, like 18, 19, 20, 21, I mean, some people on the internet who are so switched on with politics, and I love it, you know, like they follow me on Twitter and I check the profile and they're saying all of this really, really intelligent stuff that even I didn't think of. And then there's other people, I check their profiles and I'm like, wow, this is disturbing. I genuinely think that there's been a stupidification of the UK. Like, I don't know whether I'm imagining it or not, whether the internet makes it easier to see the stupid people and hear the stupid people, but there's a lot of dumb people in the world. And part of me feels really sorry for them because, you know, I don't like the way the education system is in the UK. It's very prescriptive. I've spoken about this before. I don't like the fact that it's one size fits all. If you don't learn the way that education teaches you, then you're not going to pick stuff up. But at the same time, there's just stuff that's common sense. There's only so many times that you can read the same fucking papers that say the same fucking thing. Oh, you would have a mortgage on a 650 grand house if it weren't for these bloody foreigners. The foreigners have no economic say. They don't do anything. They just exist in the same space that you do sometimes. The people in charge are the ones that make the rules. And that's another thing that really annoys me. Last night, Suella Braverman, who is now the Home Secretary, spent hours harassing a police force on Twitter, whinging about the fact that they were using someone's correct pronouns. The person was a cunt. They were a child abuser. I hope they get thrown away and the key gets lost. Because people like that should not be in society. They're scum. When it comes to misgendering, though, it's not just about the person that you're talking about. It's about the splash damage. And if you demonstrate to transgender people that you're willing to misgender someone because they've done something that you don't like, even if it's super heinous, that tells transgender people that, one, you don't see them as who they really are, and two, there's a level of behaviour that means that you will stop respecting their identity, so you only see it as a fantasy, and that's not what it is. And the fact that this needs to be explained to someone like Suella Braverman, who, by the way, that's not her real name. Her name is Suellen Braverman, and she chooses to identify as Suella. It's kind of ironic. This is another thing that I did briefly want to talk about, though, as well. I feel a little bit uncomfortable bringing this up because I don't really see how it's my business as a white guy. But when it comes to Rupert Hooke at the Fringe event at the Labour conference, I've seen so many stupid leftists, especially white leftists, with just fucking egregious, appalling takes on it, right? What she said was really, really bad, and here's why. Kwasi Kwarteng is a black man. You don't get to invalidate a part of his identity because you don't like him, because he acts in a way that you don't like. If you enfranchise part of someone's identity against them behaving in the way that you want, you are only doing damage to that entire minority, because you are saying to, like, for example, in this case, all black people, oh, if you act the way that you want, you're black. But if you don't, I just think you're superficially black, and that's appalling. Kwasi Kwarteng is a black man. He's also a fucking dickhead that's done a shit job of every single governmental job he's ever had. He's a fucking moron. It's nothing to do with his skin colour, and you can't take that away from him, and you shouldn't, because he is. It's the same as like those gay Republicans. Like they're pricks, but you can't say they're not gay or they're whatever. They're gay men who are problematic. You can be part of a minority and be problematic. But trying to deny that they're part of that minority is like saying, oh, everyone in that minority is lovely, and that's problematic because there are assholes in every single cast of people. That leads me on to the final thing that I just want to cover before I go and rest my voice because my throat really hurts. I noticed that Owen Jones was at the Labour conference. Now, look, I try really hard to stay away from commentary about further leftist people. Honestly, Owen Jones really fucking freaks me out. Like, I've seen him dogpile on people on Twitter, and I don't know if Owen Jones is, like, blissfully unaware of the power that he wields, or he's completely aware and does it on purpose but pretends that he doesn't know, and that is a terrifying prospect, but I genuinely think that that's the case. Owen Jones has over 1 million followers on Twitter, and if he doesn't like someone, he will hunt through their tweets, find stuff, and show it to people and be like, look at this person. And that person gets dogpiled to shit. This behaviour is appalling, and it's something that TERFs do all the time. They do it all the time. I got it yesterday. A TERF tried to dogpile me. Unfortunately for her, I've blocked most TERFs because I argue with them, tell them I think they're idiots, and then I block them and move on with my life. When it comes to the way that Owen Jones has been in the past, I'd really, really hate the way that he's behaving. The irony is that I align with quite a few of his politics, but the way that he behaves is separate from his politics, and I don't like the way that he treats people that he doesn't agree with. If you ask me, Owen Jones is part of a bigger problem of people on the left who have very sound economic and financial ideas, but who hate the people that don't fit into their caste. If you really liked your politics, then you would spend the time to sit and talk with people about it and explain why it's a good thing. Instead of doing exactly what he did when he went to the Labour conference, where he got Jess Phillips, who I don't particularly like either, and cornered her and tried to question her. And like they ended up in this like weird battle of like what I guess you could call wits, where they were trying to like outsmart each other with answers. And I don't understand what good that serves anybody that supports the party, anybody that supports leftist politics, anybody that supports them as individuals. To Owen, like, Jess has some problematic ideas about transgender people. You didn't bring that up. You were just alluding to it. Why? Just ask the fucking question. Are you or are you not a journalist? When it comes to Jess Phillips, why can't you just admit that you have a problem with transgender people? Is it because you know that that's in line with some of the more fringy, horrible people in your party? And if so, do you not think that's something that you might want to deal with? Because I know that she clings onto some ideas about transgender people that aren't good. She needs to deal with those things because Jess is an absolute bastion of brilliant woman power in the Labour Party, and she needs to be there. But not at the expense of transgender people, in conjunction with them. I know that Jess has been proved extremely wrong about something that she did with regards to transgender people, and she's never apologised for it, and it would be absolutely brilliant for her to do that and for her to sign the fucking thing that says that she stands with transgender people being in Labour. The biggest problem that I have that I even mentioned recently on a podcast is that I'm sick and tired of this factionalisation. Now, I don't particularly like Owen Jones or Jess Phillips, but if it meant getting ahead of the Tories, who are completely fucking decimating everything that's going on right now, and hopefully making some headway against exactly what I've been speaking about, which is the economic damage of Brexit, I would work with them both cheerfully. I would just not engage in some kind of snippy conversation that I know that one or the other or both of them would want to have. Because ultimately, we have bigger things to do than ego-stroke people that don't want to admit where they sit in politics. And I think the biggest problem is that a lot of people, and this encompasses everyone that I've spoken about, from Truss to Kwarteng to Jones to Phillips, everyone that I'm speaking about right now, they are too afraid to admit that they don't know. If you don't know the answer to what's going on right now, if you don't know the answer to what's happening in the UK, how we fix these economic crises, then shut the fuck up, Deborah, and sit back and listen to people talk. This is why I offer no solutions, and I'm under no illusions about who I am. I'm just a person that started learning about politics, and I give people my opinions, and you might like them, you might not. The reason that I do that is because I know that I can't offer solutions because I'm not qualified to. I would love to look at how things are and say this is definitely the solution to these problems. But the second I start doing that, I start becoming one of these people that's foisting my opinions on people instead of just offering them, and I don't want to be that. Ultimately, the reason I'm bringing that up is because that again fits into some of the facets of Brexiteering. You will see Brexiteers blame everybody else and everything else except for Brexit. And I've got to ask, what is it going to take for them to actually blame Brexit? I saw a guy yesterday saying, none of the people that I worked with in business left the UK because of Brexit. Well, loads of people that I worked with did. I literally had emails, and I'm not even joking here. I literally got emails from some of my old candidates, doctors and nurses, mainly doctors, saying, I am leaving. And when I said, why are you leaving so I can put that down on your leaver form, they would say, Brexit. Circumstantial evidence is not evidence, it's circumstantial. That's why the word circumstantial is front of it, and it's why people really need to learn about what they're talking about. Ultimately, the overarching message of this podcast is there's a lot of extremist views out there that I do not agree with and I don't like. And to me, there needs to be moderation. I'm not talking about centricism because centricism is a different thing. Centricism is a refusal to acknowledge extremist views and to say, oh, you know, well, I know the TERFs are aligning with the far right and they're being really bad, but maybe we should listen to them because they might have some well-founded points. Nope. Centricism doesn't work for me. I think that we need, as I've mentioned before, progressivism, but I also think that we need to flip the narrative, and instead of trying to use our ideas or our thoughts or our alignments as weapons, we need to use them as bonds to bring ourselves together. I don't agree with you on how to tackle this economic thing, but these are my ideas. What do you think? And take the fucking heat out of political discussions. I don't know why, for example, with Jones and Phillips, why they couldn't have just had a calm and rational adult discussion about how they felt, and maybe we'd have all learned something about different factions of leftist politics. When it comes to Truss and Kwarteng, we just need to drag the fuckers out. As far as I'm concerned, that might be an extremist view, but it's also a factually true one. You've had nearly 13 years now to fix your problems, make things better, and they're not doing it. So at what point do we turn around and say, let's just get rid of them? I'm going to leave you with this. My favourite viewpoint that I've seen of the day was a, funnily enough, right-wing columnist who said, the pound's not collapsing because of Brexit, and it's not collapsing because of Truss and Kwarteng's thing, even though that's exactly when it all started collapsing. It's collapsing because it looks like Starmer's going to take over. To which my response is, well, if Truss and Kwarteng were actually good at their jobs, then that wouldn't be a problem. Thank you for joining me on Politically Enraged. As always, I hope you enjoyed the show, and I will catch you again soon, hopefully this time. I won't have a goddamn cold or something else that's wrong with me because I'm tired of being ill. Not the least because I've no doubt that between Therese Coffey and Jacob Rees-Mogg, they're going to be turning hospitals into workhouses soon. Thanks as always for joining us here on Politically Enraged, the Lefties Refuge. If you do want to follow me on social media so we can chat about the episodes and future upcoming information, you can follow me on Twitter either at Political Ragers or Davy Moo. You can follow me on Instagram at Politically Enraged or Davy Moo, and you can follow me on TikTok at Davy Moo. If you do want to sponsor the show on Ko-fi, you can just search Politically Enraged on Ko-fi. Join me again soon for another episode of Politically Enraged, and remember, get politically engaged and stay politically enraged.